Okay. We are one person short of a quorum, but in interest of time, we're going to get started here. I'm assuming that at least we only need one more person, so I'm assuming that that one person will join us shortly, and then we will be able to vote on things. But technically, we only have to vote on the minutes today, so that should be easy. So let's start off with our public comment period. Anybody signed up for public comment? Anybody interested in public comment who may not have signed up? Anyone? All right, seeing none, I'll just look at unanimous consent for the approval of the agenda. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll go straight to the Metrobus hearings. Jim Hamray is here once again. Thank you very much for dropping by. So this is a good follow-up to your, were you here 1 month ago or 2 months? I think it was 2 months ago, right?
I think September. I've been here twice in the last 3 months. So
okay, there you go. You're a regular.
Both are correct. And I have supporting cast of planning manager Al Himes. He's in charge of the service planning group, so he's here to make sure I say the right things accurately.
Okay.
And senior planner Brooke Fossey, who I guess is on your agenda for later on. So we're well represented. The really great news is that this process that at some points felt like it was never ending, actually it's coming to a head tomorrow when the committee reviews the list of recommendations that we are providing. Go on to the next slide. The purpose of tomorrow's presentation is to present to the board for their, present to the committee for their recommendation to the board, the actions that went out on the public hearing, which included, in addition to all the service changes, an amendment to the tariff to clarify that we can implement no smoking policy at all the bus stops, as well as included clarifying language that when we do implement an off-board fare collection program, the proof of payment coupon, not having one can be treated as fare evasion. Just some lawyer-driven technicalities that we want to make sure are correct. There is, I think we took 40 different items to public comment. Some were recommendations and some were simply discussion initiators to get public comment and help us refine ideas and develop priorities. And I must say that we got a lot of comment, and move on to the next slide. The adjustments, we're actually dealing with 49 different routes in 40 different lines, lines being collections of routes. And the intention of the fall hearings is to do things that allow for improvement of the service, either making it more reliable because it's got on-time issues or addressing crowding or reflecting changes in the community or road networks and just the business of running good services. And also some expansions. As you know, the board has a state of good operations initiative and a priority corridor initiative, and so this process helps us implement those projects. Going on to the next slide, we did go through, you know, there were new Title VI regulations issued last April. We went through a public information and outreach effort, as well as did the formal technical assessment of the impacts of the combined effects of the service changes on benefits and impacts for minorities and low-income populations in the region. And the conclusion was that we are within the framework of a finding of no disparate impacts. And so we were able to check off that box as a procedural matter. Love the picture. Moving on to the next, we did a total of 22 individual meetings, including, I think it was two presentations here, one about the airports as well as one about the whole package. We did the 6 formal public hearings, 2 in Virginia, 2 in D.C., 2 in Maryland, as well as 9 pop-up meetings where we went out to various locations around the region, bus stations, public meetings, and started handing out brochures and talking to people. We even had a tablet along so that they could fill out the online survey standing there on the platform. And so all told, we got over 2,200 participations through the online survey, the written testimony, the personal presentations. That's one of the higher volumes of input that we've received, at least in my memory, since 1995 when we were cutting all sorts of bus services in the city. On the next slide, 3 topics that drew particular interest. Obviously, the 30s line discussion about what we can do to make it work better generated a lot. The service concepts that were promulgated about how to serve National Harbor, how to provide some connections to Virginia, how better to serve connections from Maryland, and then the discussion of the 5A, which was a focus of your discussion, generated lots of input. The next slide summarizes sort of the budgetary impacts of the adjustments. In the district, we were able to find almost $1.75 million worth of services that could be shifted from one place to another. And in addition to that, the recommendations include $500,000 of PCN initiative investment, as well as over $1.1 million worth of state of good operations. And a biggest chunk of that includes investments in the 30s line to improve service on the east side. Maryland, there was a list of items. As we worked through the process with the state of Maryland and the counties and the communities, a decision was made not to make changes on a number of items, so there was very little that could be shifted from one place to another. There was some investment recommended from both of the categories, as well as to their to their credit, Maryland DOT decided to ante up some additional money so we could do some improvements in services to serve National Harbor. And then in Virginia, there was a long list of items, some switches, as well as some investments related to previous studies. And we have service improvements on all 3 jurisdictions, Alexandria, Fairfax, Arlington, and benefiting both Falls Church and City of Fairfax. So pretty wide ranging. Bottom line is something approximating over $5 million worth of investments being put into improving and enhancing and refining and expanding services throughout the region. So not a bad fall's worth of work. On the matters of the smoking, we got comments 2-1, 2 in favor of the proposal to ban smoking and 1 in favor of not banning smoking, and we basically had no comments to the contrary about the off-board fare collection. And so in conclusion, we are recommending to the board approval of the tariff changes as noted, modifying Metro bus services as specifically defined in the attachment to the resolution, and the board needs to act in approving the Title VI equity analysis. And so when the presentation is made to the committee tomorrow, Jack Raquel will end at this point, and then Jim Nguyen and Sham Kanan, who are the Title VI representatives, will be going through some slides talking about the definitions. And so if we could move on to this slide. They're going to talk to the board and explain how this evaluation process works, since this will be the first time that it will have been implemented since the board approved the policy last month. And so obviously there was a lot of interest by a lot of people in the Title VI analysis. And so for service change, a disparate impact is identified when there's a the key here is the threshold of significance. I guess there's a presumption that you can only calculate so accurately. So if you're dealing with service changes less than 10,000 riders per day impacted, then the threshold's 8%. As your numbers get larger, your threshold gets smaller. And in this case, we are, let's see, I think, well, we'll explain later on. I'll point out the difference. And so on the next slide, the definition of impact, you can see here that the disbenefiting is only 5,200, so that's in the 8% threshold, and the benefiting is in the 13,000 range, which is in the 8% threshold, 7% threshold, and then that does a calculation that shows up on the next page that translates to a comparison of the benefiting and the disbenefiting as relates to the system-wide minority ridership. And you can see that the differential is 2.7% on the disbenefiting and less than 1% on the benefiting, and both of those are within the threshold allowed by FTA regulations. As we move to the next slide, and for disproportionate benefit, or burden, excuse me, there's a similar exercise that is done, and then you can see the comparison and the range is, again, within the threshold provided by the new regulations. And so the conclusion on the final slide is that there is no disparate impact or disproportionate burden, and we're treating folks equitably across the region as part of this large package. So with that, I'll conclude the presentation, and I'll be happy to take any specific questions.
Okay. Thanks for dropping by, as always. We'll just go around here. Barbara, anything?
Some of us were able to attend some of the bus hearings, but clearly the vast majority of the input you got was for the online survey. I was just wondering if there's anything in particular that's noteworthy that may have been different between what we saw in the hearings and what you got from the surveys, you know, in terms of the nature or passion of what the topic was.
No, I think the oral presentations were fairly well echoed in the online representations. People in general want more. They want more service. They want less crowding. They want more span of coverage. They want to preserve what they have and the understandings that they have of how the services work. And I think that's pretty much the common theme. There were a number of specific instances of this bus shows up late all the time, what can you do about it, or that stop, or this sort of thing. And we were able to address some of those in the individual hearings. For the meeting we had up at Riggs Park in Northeast Washington, that was actually sort of a follow-on to a dialogue that had started with that community a year ago in the public hearing, talking about the restructuring of the E-line. And so it sort of brought the whole process to conclusion, and we had pretty good representation and participation from the folks there that had been talking with us for the last 12 months. And And that was probably the most targeted, other than the, I think we had 110 people show up at, down in Southwest to defend the 74 route. It's definitely is an important element of that community, and we're happy to have the support and happy to provide the service.
Carol, anything?
I'll congratulate Metro. I think it was really great. It was covered today in today's paper about the preservation of the NH line and also the working with the jurisdictions to provide even more service. So I think that's really great. I don't understand. Can you go to page 37 and just kind of walk me through this, because I don't really understand how this works in real life. The one that says disparate impact, no.
Page 37.
Right. This is an example. If I can go through one of them, I think I can get it.
Okay.
So this means that 79.
You actually need to start back with on page 36.
Okay.
Because there we did a calculation. And I didn't do it personally, but we have smart people upstairs that know how to use big spreadsheets. And we've created a model that calculated that there were 5,220 people potentially, daily riders, who would be potentially impacted by the changes that were proposed, the discontinuances.
And I must congratulate Metro for adding disbenefit to headways as another transit speak item. I never heard this benefit before, but
yes.
But so this means that 5,219 people would be harmed.
Would be negatively impacted.
Negatively impacted.
Either a longer trip or they'd have to
by
shift routes.
By this change.
Or, right. And so because that number is less than 10,000, the threshold to be considered significant would be 8%.
Okay, then you go to page 37, and are you saying that it's only 2.7%?
Yes.
So therefore, you don't have to count it in your calculation, so to speak.
Or well, therefore, you can say, you can claim that there is not a disparate impact as defined by the rules, because it doesn't exceed 8%.
Okay, so you basically have set up a formula. Then you are applying the numbers to this formula, and so it's not that there aren't people that are going to be impacted. It's just that their numbers are not sufficient proportionally to meet the threshold for having to be. I'm not saying to be
insufficiently disproportionate.
Got it.
Maybe
okay.
Is a backwards planning way to say the word.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Just to tag on to that. So, what if you had found that there was a disproportionate impact? What would have happened then?
Okay. Then you go to step two. And then you have to document that you have tested every available, feasible, alternative way of accomplishing that business purpose. And we haven't done it yet, so we don't know exactly how to do it. And we're hoping to avoid having to learn. But we do have people that have been in regular contact with the Federal Transit Administration Office of Civil Rights and all the folks that are interpreting the new regulations. And so then we have to go through this exercise. So instead of discontinuing a service, can we reroute another service? Like, for example, where we were proposing to discontinue some E6 trips up in Upper Northwest, could we extend the M4 to cover that? Can we is there already an alternative provided by Ride-On? Is there a way that we could cut fewer trips in order to meet the purpose, that sort of thing. And then if we can demonstrate that the action being recommended to the board is the only feasible alternative or is the best alternative available, then the board can make that determination. And in the construct of the Title VI regulation, would have a defensible position in case someone filed an administrative action request with the FTA, which is the area of addressing disproportionality.
So in other words, it gets a whole lot more complicated.
Yes.
Right. And you can't, and the FTA has already signed off on Metro's calculation, I mean, the calculation of the threshold. So you can't say, oops, there are more people, so therefore I'm going to finagle with the threshold.
Well, that's correct.
Okay.
As decisions were being made and we were changing some of the recommendations, or we were deciding not to do something, then we were constantly having to go back and redo the calculation to pull out the NH1 or keep the NH1, add an NH3, mm-hmm. Keep the E6, add the 74, et cetera, et cetera, change the numbers. Okay. So it's a very dynamic process until we get to, oh, yesterday morning when the final decision was made on the last piece of information. And so we've probably run the numbers a dozen times in the last 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My question, I guess, goes back to page 32, and we're talking about, like, the prohibiting smoking and then covering the off-board fare collection. How, like, is there any way to really enforce the prohibition of smoking? Like, people, because most of these bus bays or bus stops are outside. So
well,
really
many of the jurisdictions have passed no smoking in public area local ordinances and laws. The district, I think it was either last month or the month before, passed a new regulation about banning smoking at bus stops. All this does is really puts our compact legislation or the compact regulations in alignment with what the localities have already done. So the enforcement would be the enforcement of a local ordinance. It could be done by transit police. It could be done by local police or any of the federal police agencies who have law enforcement privileges. And it would be a enforcement of whichever regulation is in effect in that locality. Okay. And that's true about all of our whether it be parking tickets or traffic fines or anything like that.
Okay. And then what does this off-board fare collection, because I know most people these days use like Smart Trip or
right.
they use cash on the buses because we don't have any more paper tickets.
Well, I think
tickets.
The closest example is the light rail system in Baltimore where you buy your ticket
right.
on the platform and then you get to ride for 90 minutes or whatever the time frame is. And when the conductor comes through and he says, everybody show your ticket, displaying of the ticket is the act of showing that you paid the fare. If you don't have a ticket, then you would be charged with evading fare and could be fined whatever is the appropriate penalty in that jurisdiction. Well, our compact wasn't really clear that that would be an enforceable offense. So just to make sure that it was clear, we added that proof of payment would be, absence of proof of payment would be considered evading fare.
Okay,
and that was the clarification.
Okay, so this is more just for like light rail then? Because
well,
really
this is what the Crystal City Potomac Yard is going to try and implement next year.
Okay.
And in that case, the City of Alexandria and Arlington County will create a local ordinance that we will enforce. This just makes sure that our own internal regulations align with what the localities will do.
Okay. And then I just have one last question. I know. So this is sort of, I know that the 50s were maybe not really discussed that much in this sort of route change and things like that. We had discussed maybe when I first started on the RAC about like getting like different types of service on the 50 bus routes,
mm-hmm.
But it really hasn't changed that much over the past year.
Yes.
Have we started? Is there going to be more of a change? Like, we were supposed to have the extended buses because the population has grown significantly. Like, those types of things,
yeah.
Like, we're most likely a year away from that discussion now, and a lot of the change still hasn't come
mm-hmm.
to the 50 buses.
I guess three things. One, the recommendation for changes on the 14th Street line were documented in our 14th Street study, which identified sort of phasing implementation. We did phase one, which was to correct running times and add some additional trips We've been doing, but we have not implemented all of the recommendations because we do not have buses and we do not have funding equivalent to meeting that full concept. So for this fiscal year, we've been doing a number of investments to deal with midday, nights, and weekend services to make sure they're reliable. And I think there is some investment on 14th Street, and Al, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that was done. It did not require a public hearing because it was a small incremental improvement. Next fiscal year, fiscal 15, we hope by this time of the year next year, we'll have some additional buses to the fleet. That's the first year of expanded fleet expansion. We're going to have to go through a process during the first quarter of calendar 14 to determine where those buses are going to go. That's when the decision about making new incremental improvements will come from. I would note that we have we are going to be shifting some of our RTIC coaches, our long buses, from Georgia Avenue over to 16th to deal with some crowding issues. We're now carrying 1,000 people a day more on 16th Street now than we were a year ago, 1,000 riders a day. And unfortunately, 14th Street is growing like that. Georgia Avenue is growing like that. The 263 line that goes up 9th Street is growing like that. And so we're, again, finding ourselves behind in matching the demands. So it's going to be a challenge for us.
Marianne?
Thank you. I'm going to have a couple of maybe detailed questions, and it's okay to say that's too detailed. But the general question is around, in looking at this, I attended the Riggs Park, which I thought was a really, really good discussion on a lot of routes. And there were several specific things where people had maybe narrow but specific suggestions, and one of them is in the ease around the changing buses at Fort Totten for people that go shopping up at Tenleytown Seniors and the getting on off buses. And there was another, and again, one individual talking about the problem of some buses going into, I think, Prince George's and North because the buses have time constraints that it's hard to get in and out of town. On those kinds of things, how were there any besides those two where you had some really difference of opinion that you had to choose one way or another, and how did you deal with it? Because looking at your details, it's hard to know having not been there. I know that the E, in looking at that, it looks like the suggestion to have people change at Fort Totten remained on the, I think it's the E2.
Well, no, actually, Part of the change that we were presenting was that you would be able to ride from the terminal at Eastern Avenue all the way over to Friendship Heights without having to change buses at Friendship at Fort Totten. And that seemed to go over pretty well.
Is that then?
And so that was part of what we were affirming by going out to public hearing. The
okay.
But what... what I'm trying to say is folks are welcome to comment not only on what's on the docket at the hearing, but also a number of other things. And so we take lots and lots of notes, and we pass them on to the service planners to figure out what to do about that. One example of where additional discussion is needed is the 30 line. We got feedback, lots and lots of feedback. And so we, working with the mayor's office, actually set up another meeting down in Southeast, an open community forum where folks were able to come in and have a ongoing dialogue about exactly what we had cooked up and what that meant to them specifically at that bus stop. Mm-hmm. And answer all the detailed questions. And I think that turned into a real positive once they got done yelling at us about how then it got into a real positive discussion and came up with some real good ideas that we then translated into our final recommendations.
Yeah, I think that answered my other question, which was the non-bus route things that came up. I know at Riggs Park it was around places where there were bus shelters that weren't didn't exist, and it sounds like those things you put into wherever is appropriate to look at.
Yes, we are trying to get a task order to go build a bus stop and shelter on Eastern Avenue where Ms. Bowser wants it to happen, and we're working with our engineers to get that accomplished. So that's how we're able to to sort of be the funnel, and all the ideas come in, and then we pass them on to the right parties.
Okay, Fred? Going over to this side. And Sherry? No?
You mentioned that you had the best participation since 1995 on bus adjustments, I think it was. Any analysis as to what caused such great participation? Like, what did you do that this
time?
Well,
actually, the online survey and all of our additional outreach efforts, I think, really drove up the numbers. You know, generally, we would, in the past, you might average 25 people at a public hearing, sometimes more, sometimes less, depending on the, you know, culture of the community. In this case, the online made it convenient for folks, and it was sort of a challenge to craft the questionnaire, but once done, it proved very effective and lots of participation. Not in this particular forum. We've done, and I forget if it was for the last round of fair hearings, so that would have been 2 years ago, I think was the first time we really tried going online with questionnaires, and that proved successful, and now that we've got a director of research who's very much in tune with online polling, she was able to craft this questionnaire, and that made a big difference. Plus, being out at New Carrollton Station or up at Friendship Heights, standing there at the bus stop of the affected line, handing out brochures, telling people, you know, we've got something going on here. Also, I attended an ACT Montgomery meeting up in Silver Spring and was able to encourage folks to pitch out their ideas and share their thoughts with us, and they did.
I just have one question, it's real quick. The table on page 31, and I didn't hear you clearly. You said that the numbers for the cost reduction and addition, there were minimal changes, so I take it that's why the PCN and SGO initiatives are so low.
Yes.
Okay.
For example, in Prince George's, we had proposed transferring the R3 line from Metro Bus operation to Prince George's the bus. Mm-hmm. The county reported back that they were not at this time prepared to do that. So we retained the service. We'll continue to operate it, and that meant that we had that much fewer resource that we could redirect to invest on other services like at Bowie or the B30 or elsewhere. And so the net impact is de minimis by comparison. But this is just, And I want to point out, this is just one slice of time. We've done, in fiscal 14, we're doing $7.5 million worth of PCN and SOGO investments. And so a lot of investment went in June, some in September. There's a bunch of work coming up in December. And so this is really looking for March and next June, and then we'll do another hearing next fall. So there'll be, we'll make sure that each of the jurisdictions get their equitable share over the course of a year or two's worth of service changes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your work. Let me just say I want to commend you in terms of the NH1 because that's a very, very controversial issue in terms of people getting to National Harbor and getting home after. That's a really big issue in terms of keeping that up. I would only ask that you consider in the future not to abandon the idea that you had of going from King Street, I believe, to National Harbor. You may not institute that maybe a year or two, but, you know, I would suggest you really keep that on the burner because that, you know, that sounded like a good idea. Keep in mind also, National Harbor is going to get Tangier Outlet as well as that casino, so you may have to keep in mind what's going on in terms of increasing service.
Well, I thank you for those. We absolutely will, because I think eventually there'll be enough there to warrant the connection to Virginia. Part of this exercise wasn't to propose a decimation of services in Prince George's, but to pitch out the idea of here's the options, what are the priorities, Virginia, Maryland, Prince George's, National Harbor, are we ready or are there other things that are of higher priority? And I think the clear feedback was maintaining the existing services and existing connections were critical. And it was interesting at the public hearing, the Walmart across the Kmart across the street from the library, the manager actually came and testified that 90% of his employees came to and from work by bus. So it was really important for him personally to have the NH1 stay running on Oxon Hill Road, which was a service adjustment that came out of the last time we took this to public hearing. So it's progressive, and I wanted to thank you particularly for your statement, because when the council member and the state senator were talking about how somebody needed to provide resources, it was good of you to point out that they were the ones that could provide the resource. It's not us. We're just working with what you gave us. And so we really appreciated that. The city of Alexandria continues to be interested, but it's not a high priority, and this year their money is going into Crystal City Potomac Yard. I think the state of Maryland needs to decide whether they want to do economic development to connect to Virginia or if they want to continue to focus on serving the existing demand. The really good thing that came out of the discussion was an awareness by the county and the state of the limitations of going to Branch Avenue. And so we were able to negotiate an addition of, I think it's 13 additional trips a week. So now we had a bus that left National Harbor at 10:58. Of course, most of the work shifts ended at 11. So we moved it to 11:06. Well, you can't leave National Harbor at 11:06 and get to Branch Avenue before the train leaves. But by running to Southern Avenue, you can catch the train on its way. And so we were able to solve an annoying problem for the employees. Secondly, we were able to get additional funding to run another bus at 12:06. So, and that connects to Southern Avenue where we have 24-hour-a-day bus services. So for folks who live in Ward 8, Ward 6, Ward 7, all the way through the city, they're able to make connections that were lost when the route was shifted to Branch Avenue about 4 years ago. And then we were also able to get funding to add Saturday and Sunday morning services because the train doesn't get to Branch Avenue till almost 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, folks making breakfast need to be at work earlier than that. So we were able to get a 6:25 and a 7:25 Saturday morning and Saturday night trip going to the harbor. So it may have been a really messy, muddy kind of free-for-all of a process, but the end result was actually quite positive. We established some new connections. We reconnected to Southern Avenue, which has been an objective of ours, and I think we'll serve the employees and the residents better as a result.
two quickies. The B30, I like what you did. You know, there are many options to get the BWI, keeping it the way it is, excellent. And I also agree that the S in the district, the S buses, always crowded, more service if you can get it.
Thank you.
All right, we're a little bit over time, but just parting note, or just parting question for me. I will be waiting for the connection now between the 96 and the new 98 bus. So in the middle of winter, I'll be thinking of you. But you were talking a little bit about the next fiscal year, and I'm wondering if you could just offer us a quick preview of sort of which lines you're looking at, which lines may be sort of on the bubble for next year.
Oh, my. Well, we've been completing studies left and right, and so in Maryland, the Y line, the Q line have been in waiting for a while. We're finishing a C line, the C2, C4. So those are the top three candidates, I guess, coming out of Montgomery. We've been actually, as a result of the complete and total rejection of our proposal of the W15 by the riders down on Livingston and Bach Road, we are going to work with the county to take a look at all of the services in the Oxon Hill wedge of South County. And so there will likely be some recommendations coming out of that that we can take back to the council member and the delegates to here's what you need to do. Give us some money, and this is what we would do with it. Come up with a plan there. In the district, we've finished the 80-line study. We've done some preliminary adjustments as part of this, but there's more to be done. Rhode Island Avenue, starting from downtown all the way out to College Park in Beltsville, we're finishing that study. We'll be looking at service adjustments there. I'm just trying to think in the city here. We're going to continue to work to try and figure out what to do with the H2, H4, H8, H9, B8, B9, getting connections out to the development. Lincoln Heights that we've been trying for a couple of years, but the development's not quite there yet. In Virginia, the Little River Turnpike study is finishing. We did some adjustments. Hopefully there'll be some additional buses coming from NVTA that we'll be able to invest, and that'll be probably the premier service expansion, but there's continued work on Arlington Boulevard and Washington Boulevard and Glebe Road and Rex. We're going to probably have to start doing some more investments down on Richmond Highway. So that's sort of a range of things we have to choose
that's
from.
That's a pretty extensive list.
We've done, I think, 19 studies so far, 10 of which have had some implementation. So there's a growing list of potential candidates for the PCN and ZOGO investments. And also, because we do have some 20 additional buses to invest, Al is cooking up an evaluation that will help us identify some of the greatest needs in terms of crowding or on-time performance or long waits and help us zero in on some of the non-big stuff, just the little stuff that makes things work and makes life better.
All right. Well, thank you very much for all of your help and your continual appearances here for all of our feedback. We really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate your comments and questions, and we'll be back to talk about the work plan for fiscal 15.
Okay.
Once we get engaged with the locals and figuring out what that'll be.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Before I forget, now that we have a quorum, are there any objections to approving the minutes that we have on the agenda from July and October?
Yeah, I just want to say that I really did review them carefully.
Okay.
In minor edits.
Which should be incorporating what you have.
Okay.
If anybody wants to
know. All right. Seeing no objections, we'll consider the minutes adopted. Thank you. All right. Let's go on to the Respect Your Ride campaign. I feel like this should be called Respect Yo Ride, but maybe that's just me. Your sounds way too formal for this. But.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Brooke Fossey, and I am a planner in the bus planning, scheduling, and customer facilities group that Jim mentioned earlier. Thank you for having us. And we're here to discuss the Respect Your Ride program. So this program really was initiated after there were several incidents involving young riders being involved in disorderly conduct on both Metro Bus and Metro Rail. Resulting of these incidents, they really did not have much to do with Metro itself, but it had an impact on both safety as well as service in the system, as well as the safety of other passengers that are walking by. So the purpose of this campaign is to promote both safe and respectful behavior among our young riders. And to accomplish this, we are strengthening our relationship with schools, as well as doing public outreach at our schools and also engaging the students in a real honest conversation about both safety on rail and as well as on bus. In the summer of 2012, Metro conducted a survey with youth riders. And we really wanted to know what their perceptions were. Youth? We wanted to know the perceptions of Metro and what behavior they had seen among their peers, as well as the causes for these incidents. And our findings really were that youth saw riding Metro as a venue of freedom. They were away from parents, away from other authoritative figures, and it was their arena to be free between home and school. And they also told us that they knew what was right, and they knew what was wrong. And a message of them, don't do this, don't do that, wouldn't really be effective for them. As a result of these findings, we thought that the best way to engage was to bring youth from areas where incidents have occurred. So in December of 2012, we invited youth from the area, as well as from public schools, public charter schools, and also participants that were part of the Riders Advisory Council's 2012 Youth Transit Town Hall. We invited them to come here to the Jackson Graham Building, and they came and they collaborated with Metro to create what was the most effective messaging for their peers. And they created the tagline, Respect Your Ride. And so with that, we asked them what other items would they see as being an influence for their peers? How could we best communicate this message? And they gave us great ideas. And among them was school outreach with both a collaboration from transit police as well as bus, and just great items as well, especially back to school items, such as rulers with the campaign on it and like string backpacks. We increased our awareness with this campaign this summer. We had a partnership with the WKYS radio station, and we ran radio PSAs with the tagline of Respect Your Ride. In addition to that, we had a back-to-school safety letter signed by Chief Pavlik, and this was directed to students and parents, informing them of the rules of conduct as well as consequences in the Metro system. In addition to this back-to-school safety letter, we've also done another safety letter for the Silver Line. And as we anticipate the arrival of the Silver Line, we know that many students will be living near Metro stations and will be for the first time riding our system, and so we want to make sure that they're familiarized with the rail system and know basic safety information. We've done additional outreach. We've gone to schools both in Maryland as well as in the District of Columbia, and we have schools lined up to go to in Virginia as well. And these include back-to-school nights as well as school assemblies. These school assemblies were solely focused on Metro, and I will actually hand it to Brooke Fossey to discuss a little bit more about the assemblies because it's been a collaboration between both departments.
Thanks, Elizabeth. I just wanted to take a step back for a moment and explain a little bit about my role with schools. So I was hired in April of this year, and my role is to coordinate with schools on bus services and work with our scheduling group and the divisions on any operational issues that come up on school routes, and also work with transit police on the behavior issue on bus. And Elizabeth has done most of the work on Respect Your Ride before I came on board, so she's really looped bus in, and we've been actively engaged and bringing bus operators out to assemblies, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But vandalism on bus is one of the major issues, I think, that got us involved, because rock throwing incidents, brick throwing, throwing any object has really increased. And therefore, our maintenance costs have gone up. We're up to, I think, $1 million quoted at vandalism a year. And buses get taken out of service because they need to be repaired. So that's one of the issues that we try to drive home and discuss with the students when we go out to assemblies. So as Elizabeth mentioned, we've taken the Respect Your Ride campaign out to schools and communities, community events this fall. And there have been several community events that Transit Police and Bus has attended, including an anti-violence youth summit and National Night Out over the summer. There have been many back-to-school nights that we've had representatives at, and 6 middle school and high school assemblies this fall, including ones at Stuart Hobson Middle School, Anacostia High School, Wilson High School, Friendship Collegiate Academy, Kramer Middle School, and Washington Metropolitan High School. And we're in the midst of planning 6 more middle school and high school assemblies for the rest of this fall, and then we'll begin planning for the next, after the new year as well. So we've been able to reach more than 3,000 students so far through this campaign. And we've had bus operators and transit police that actually ride the buses come out and to talk with students candidly, answer questions, tell students what they see from their perspective. So it's been really engaging at the schools. It's been fun to see how bus operators and police are able to convey what they're seeing from the authorities' standpoint, and then answer questions that students have. We've also been trying to partner with principals, and the principal at Anacostia Academies at Anacostia has been really engaged. He's asked us to send him information about incidents involving his students and warnings involving his students so that he can follow up. So we're trying to sort of roll out a pilot program with Anacostia, and if that's successful, roll it out further with other schools. Chief Pavlik and the Assistant General Manager for Bus Services, Jack Requa, also met with the Chancellor's Office for DCPS this fall, and that was the first time I think that they've come together to discuss school and youth issues on transit. So that was a really enlightening conversation, and we plan to meet quarterly moving forward. And they're engaged, and they have staff who are willing to help sort of push the message out from the top down. And finally, I just wanted to also highlight the Free Ride on Bus program, which I'm not sure how much you heard about on the RAC, but it's a new program in the District of Columbia this year that was funded by the City Council to allow district students to ride for free between the hours of 5:30 and 9 in the morning and 2 and 8 in the afternoon to get to and from school. And we've really seen the number of student riders significantly increase this year as a result of that, which is great for students getting to school. However, we are hearing about some crowding on lines, especially around dismissal. So we are engaged in looking at ridership numbers and how we can sort of alleviate some of those crush capacity issues when they arise. And just for a little bit of background about the numbers, we had an average of about 12,000 to 14,000 students riding daily last year, and we're up to between 22 and 25,000 daily this year. So I'll hand it back over to Elizabeth.
And I'll just add one more thing to the Respect Your Ride assemblies that we've been having, that I've seen firsthand that what's been a success is that we've had both bus operators as well as officers there talking about their experience, and most importantly, giving a face to Metro. Because youth often ride in our system and they just see trains and buses. They don't really see the operator, but putting a face to the name really drives that message home, as well as seeing that the operator is just another member of their community. They have a family just like them, and that when they're impacted, their families are impacted. And we often ask the question that, how would you feel if a member of your family was treated? Such as incidents that have occurred in the past. And we've seen that's been a real success. Another thing that we've done with the Youth Forum is that we've collaborated with the youth to create a pledge. This pledge was solely created by youth, and this is about youth behavior, how when they will respect other passengers as well as Metro employees, and in return, WMATA employees and other passengers will respect them. So it's really a two-way communication. Our next steps include, as Brooke mentioned, additional assemblies, both in middle schools and high schools. We also are creating our outreach in the Silver Line area, as I mentioned before, and we're very excited about that. We're going to schools in Fairfax County and really collaborating with them on promoting the Respect Your Ride campaign. In fact, we are collaborating with a high school, George C. Marshall High School, and they're creating, their marketing students are creating Respect Your Ride posters within their school to promote the campaign. And with that, I'll take questions.
Okay, thank you. Maybe just to put it all in context a little bit, because I'm sure some of the comments will touch on this. What percentage of crime or incidents on Metro involve youth?
I can't tell you a really exact percentage.
In general.
I mean, it's a small percentage because, for example, within the past couple, since school started, we've had, I believe, 40 warnings given out to juveniles, and that's actually a small number compared to what is given out in total to adults and to adult ridership.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I think we'll just take questions as they arise. We'll maybe spend about 5 or 10 minutes with questions. So, Pat, go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate your coming. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend the youth town hall meeting last year, but it sounded like an excellent idea. I just have two questions. It sounds like you're targeting middle and high school students, and I can really appreciate their honesty about them saying the parents not being around, so they were, you know, were behaving inappropriately. I have a two-part question. The first one is, is anybody targeting that 18 to 24-year-old age group? And the reason I ask is that last Friday, when I was coming home from school, I actually was at the Anacostia station, and there was an incident that was really quite frightening to me and a lot of passengers on the Metro train. We were approached, the train was stopped, and we were approached by the Metro Police and D.C. Metropolitan Police, and they pulled out 9mm. The train was full. There were even kids on the bus. But what I did not understand is why they did not wait until they got all the way to Branch Avenue to do what they needed to do, because they were only two stops away. They were looking apparently for a young person, male. They did take one male off, appeared to be between 21 and 24 off, but they were looking for someone that had a gun. But my question was, Respect Your Ride. This does sound good, and I do notice that the kids do cut up. I don't know what it is about Friday night. It's Friday night when I see a lot of it, and it's really not bad. They're usually just pretty loud. But that particular incident really bothered me a lot, so I can appreciate your being here and wanting to do something before something really, really bad happens to those of us that rely on the Metro transportation. So I really do appreciate what you're doing, but my main question is anybody targeting that 19 to 24? You know, because some of us don't grow up as quickly as we should.
Yes, thank you so much for your comments, and I apologize that you've had that experience in the system. Right now, we are not targeting that the young adult age gap, the 18 to 24. We hope that with our assemblies that we're reaching out in high school students, that when they do reach that age, that they're very respectful riders in the system. Right. However, at this moment, we aren't.
All right, thank you.
And I just wanted to mention, in bus planning, we have had some conversations about future initiatives that we might undertake up to 21 years of age. Maybe it goes a little bit higher than that, but I think it's something that is noted, and thank you for bringing that up, and we'll definitely think about how we can engage youth who might be outside of the typical high school age, who might be still in high school or just beyond that.
But thank you.
Young at heart.
Thank you.
Frank?
I have a question about your statistic of reaching more than 3,000 students. And on that same page, it says you've had community events and assemblies and stuff. I would think that like 5 or 6 assemblies would be 3,000 students. So
well, that's exactly
have you had
yep, I mean,
have you had more than you haven't had more than 5 or 6 assemblies, or?
We've had 6 assemblies this fall and other community events. So it's likely that we did have reached more than 3,000, but that's taking into account the enrollments at the schools that we visited.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to add to that, yes, the 3,000 just includes a few of the assemblies that we've been to. It doesn't include all the community outreach events and back to school nights that we've done.
Okay. Yeah. Karen?
Thank you so much for your presentation. I just have 2 quick questions. How is Metro measuring the effectiveness of this program?
I think that's a great point. We had a couple metrics that we were considering, and one of those is the number of warnings that's issued. And Elizabeth may want to speak more about this with Transit Police, but we have been targeting the warnings more effectively this year with youth and keeping track of them. MTPD has instituted a new tracking program for warnings. And so while we don't want to see the number going up, we do want to see that we're reaching, that the warnings are being issued. In addition, we are considering the amount of time it takes to communicate incidents to principals. In particular at Anacostia, since the principal is so engaged, how we're able to communicate when an incident happens to when he learns about it to when he's able to do something about it. So those are a couple, but you may have other things too.
Another metric is the pledge, going back to the pledge. We hope to create actual pledge cards when we go out to the schools that they sign those pledge cards. And as being enrolled in the pledge program, you actually are incentivized to act good, explain good behavior in the system, because we're gonna have prizes for them. So another metric is actually the number of pledge cards that we get signed within the schools.
Okay, and my other question was regarding Woodrow Wilson High School, because there's been lots of incidents in that area over the years. And I wanted to know if the principal from that particular school has bought into this program.
Okay. Yes. So you're speaking about Wilson, not
Woodrow Wilson.
Yes.
High school.
Yep. We actually had an assembly at Wilson for their entire student body, and the principal is very engaged, and he got up and spoke. And I mean, you can actually—it's really interesting to see the relationships that the principals have with their students, and you can tell that those students there really respect the current principal there. So that was encouraging to see that.
Okay. Last question: have you done any outreach to the schools in Prince George's County?
We are continuing to do outreach, though we did one outreach at Central High School.
Okay.
And then we are trying to expand upon that, definitely.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And I also wanted to add, I've been going out to the bus garages and speaking with operators to learn about what issues they're having on specific routes and with specific schools, so we can learn from the source what schools we may need to be targeting with our outreach.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. I have an My office is actually located at Eastern High School, which is a stadium armory stop. And actually, I never have any trouble with the children. The problem is when I get to Gallery Place, and I don't think that area has been really dealt with. And just my observation is when you have a confluence of different schools, you know, Spring Garden shut down. And so Spring Garden students are now part of Eastern High School, and so you have conflicts, and I think that's where the major issues, you know, occur. And I don't think Gallery Place has really stepped up and dealt with the issue with the youth. How are you targeting Gallery Place in particular?
I can elaborate on that. It's definitely difficult because we have students that are going in the system, and we want to target the schools first because we think our greatest influence will be in the schools. But with stations such as Gallery Place and stations such as transfer stations, it's a little bit much more difficult because there aren't many schools nearby. They're going there for other reasons, for entertainment, for shopping. And we really rely on policing in those cases. And so we rely on our officers. They are aware of where the crime is occurring. They are aware of where incidents are occurring, both involving youth and adults. And that really speaks to a program that we have in Transit Police, which is MetroStat, which is every other MetroStat, where we actually have officers come in, officials, and they report on the crimes that have been occurring and where they are occurring, locations, and that's how we effectively police the area. So with stations such as Gallery Place, we really rely on our officers. And we actually have a great relationship with the officer at Gallery Place. He has been a great asset to us, and he has been attending the youth forums. And he's also, I believe he's attended a few of the assemblies as well. And so we really started out with him, and he was kind of our expert at Gallery Place. And we have a great relationship with the officers that are out on the field.
All right, last question, Carol.
One prime example definitely is fare evasion, and then a juvenile would be given the warning.
So give me an example of something that would be more annoying to passengers or upsetting to passengers.
It can be anything from eating the system, or could be just being having like disorderly behavior in the system. So for example, if a rider calls in for disorderly behavior, then an officer will come in, and if he feels that that incident requires a warning given out to the student, then the student will receive it.
And so what you're saying is the officer may not, do they have to put this in order to give a warning?
They can, yeah. It's also under the discretion of the officer.
Okay. So what happens to the point? So if the person doesn't gain, they get a what?
Right. So it's also up to the discretion of the officer, but we do have a limit that when a student is given a warning, they're actually entered into our system. They're entered into our record system. And when that student, for example, stopped again, that officer can call to find out how many warnings that student has been given. And at that case, if that student has been given several warnings, then other consequences will be given out. Arrest or other consequences, yes.
Sorry, the comment that I have is I'm glad to see what I think is a slight turn in Metro's position. I mean, I have a problem, and I've had a problem for years with Metro sort of connecting youth and crime in the same sentence, et cetera. So it seems that many of the actions you're taking are more positive. I would also like to say that, and I think the bus operator going out and being a face is an excellent idea. I would like to suggest that I would like to see Metro also add to its outreach internships and opportunities, and so the students can look down the road and see not only can I be a responsible rider and user of the system, but there might be employment opportunities, because I think Metro is not only the major transit system, but it's also a major economic driver. So I would like to see them live up to what I think are their obligations as a major employer in this area. So.
Thank you. And actually, I can add to the comment on the internships. Thank you so much for mentioning that, because Metro does have a great internship program for students, and I'm actually a result of that internship.
Okay, but I think they should go. Are there internships mentioned in the same respect your ride campaigns, or are they mentioned in other schools? I'm saying the two should be married.
Yes, we will definitely incorporate the two. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to mention one of the programs that Elizabeth is working on. I'm sorry to jump in. Is she's gone out to Friendship Collegiate Academy and is working with one of their teachers in their media class to create video content for our website. And this is a class that they're required to do work that they would be doing towards a career, so something that's representative of what they could be doing in their future. So that sort of gets to the internship point, but not quite there. So I think it's a great point to bring up in our assemblies and other outreach.
Okay, quick question from Debbie. Question.
In order to recognize who the students are, do they all have to have a student ID with them all the time in case the officer want to check on them?
Elizabeth may be able to speak a little bit more about what transit police needs in order to follow up with warnings. Yes, identification is important. Now that the free ride on bus is happening, beginning in February, every single student that will want to take advantage of free ride on bus will need to have a DC-1 card, which has their photo on it and their name and their school. So that will help with identification. But right now, it's sort of it's being rolled out a little bit in phases, so not every student has a DC-1 card just yet.
Okay. Yes, quick.
Okay, so I know that you're saying that eventually you'll be giving out the pledge cards. I don't know if there's any way on the back of the pledge card you can maybe put, the main rules, when you go onto a bus, there are those bullet points that say, you know, no eating, no loud music, things like that. So there's also like a reference point. So people don't have to go from memory, oh, am I allowed to do this? Am I not allowed to do that? Just maybe a suggestion.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming. And, you know, we're always here if you're trying to sort of brainstorm or think of other things that have to do with riders and want feedback. We're always here to give that feedback. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on to the next item, which is website brainstorming. So in talking about what we're going to do at this particular meeting, we were informed that there is upcoming a sort of review, a sort of periodic review of Metro's website that's going to happen. So the leadership team was pretty interested in getting in on the ground floor of all of this and starting to think as a RAC about what we might suggest that Metro do with that. There's going to be a, I guess there's a request for proposals that's either out there or will be going out in the near future that will basically help Metro to revamp its website. So, John, you want to just give a couple more details real quick?
Right. I mean, I don't have a ton of details. I guess what I can just say is that there was a request for proposals put out. They're hoping to award some kind of contract within the relatively short term. And then I think the timeline was, you know, 5 to 8 months of a new website, but they haven't actually selected, excuse me, they haven't actually selected anybody yet.
Sure.
And
so this gives us a little bit of time, I think valuable time to come up with some new suggestions, because I know that in our discussions throughout the time that I've been on the RAC, it always tends to come back to the website at some point. Well, why isn't this on the website, or why can't I find this on the website? So I think this is a really good opportunity for us, and I wanted to just start off by doing just a little bit of brainstorming so that maybe some of the committees could also take this up as well, and I hope maybe the committee chairs can maybe keep a, you know, take some extra special notes on this one and sort of frame a discussion that may be used to help inform what we want out of Metro on this. So I'll just start off the discussion by maybe we can start by going around and saying, I wish Metro's website did, or I wish Metro's website featured something like that, something to sort of complete that sentence. James, you want to start us off?
Yes, I will, very quickly. I just want to, I will say that I wish Metro's website was budget user friendly. In other words, somebody can go into the website, pull up the latest budget or proposed budget without having to go around with a lot of stuff. That's all.
Okay. Pat? Nothing yet? Frank?
I wish it on the trip planner that it would be easier to use, to negotiate, and in particular that it would save your destinations and places of origin.
Okay. What do you mean by more easily navigated beyond that use?
I've used it a bazillion times, and I find when I want to make the adjustment about there's the thing at the bottom about how to adjust by time, you know, 15 minutes before or after, but I always forget that that's there. And I don't think it's just me. You know, it's not in an intuitive place.
All right. Karen?
I wish the website was structured a little more simpler. I think it's very hard to find information, and information that's accessed frequently should have folders where it's really easy to find it.
Okay. Sherry?
I wish that Metro's website had the list of the cast of characters. What I get from the folk I talk to every day is who does what. And thank you, John, over there, because he made me look like a stupid superstar at my office. When there's a bus stop that's discontinued, and it's not a Metro issue, it's a Department of Public Works issue, no one knew who to contact. and I found out it was the Department of Public Works issue, and it got corrected. So if it's a bus operation issue, a discontinued stop, we list the person who handles that. If it's a discrimination issue, anything, list the person who works in Metro who handles those problems.
Okay. Debbie? Fred? Huh. Explain in what sense the how it functions or how to put money on it or
all of their strange rules they have about them. So like it's this very it's like medieval almost the torture you go through is like that is like a startup. So.
Okay. Marianne?
I guess I would like the website to have a more usable list of things functioning and not, meaning like escalators.
Mm. Okay.
They all don't work.
That's unfortunately mostly true.
So more accessible information on accessibility, as it were.
There you go.
Okay. Candace? Nothing? It's a perfect website. Other Pat?
Actually, this is something I actually know something about. I actually work in this area. So as far as accessibility standards, John, I'd say that we want to put in Section 508 accessibility standards.
That, I believe, was part of the
RFP.
The RFP, I'm sure it's standard.
Right. So they're merging. Actually, there are going to be some new standards coming out in December. So they're going to update them, I guess. So as long as they meet the Access Board standards, that'd be great.
Carol?
I wish the website would have something that the Baltimore, Mass Transit Administration has. You can rate your ride. There's a link right on the website that says rate your ride, and I think that is really great. For those of us who heard the presentation by the Director of Research, and remember when she was telling us how they selected people for a random sample and how like if you got called, you could only talk about the randomly selected trip you had taken, not the one you were mad about, if you know what I mean? So I really like that ability to immediately go home or wherever, get in your office and send them an assessment, and it's sort of similar if you think about it. I stayed at an awful hotel this weekend, but that's another story. And of course, I got a thing from them saying, "How was your stay at whatever?" So I think more information like that could make Metro more conscious about, you know, trends and service. So that's what I want.
Okay, Barbara.
The customer comment. You know what your comment is, and it's really hard to figure out how to get it into that form because it's kind of a one-size-fits-all. And it just needs to be more sophisticated, interactive, so that you take a different path if it's a late bus versus a dead train or whatever.
I was going to have the same point, actually. I wish that Metro's website had a more free-form customer comment form. Public comment? Any public comments on this? I know that Kurt has a comment on this one.
Thank you, Ben. And actually, for taking comments on this, I will forgive you for not taking comments on either of the previous speakers. I guess my comment to the RAC would be to consider carefully the scope of work of this RFP. And so things like a free-form comment field, and I mean, I say this working in IT, when we get business requirements, we can't push back. And so, you know, if you get told, make this pretty, but don't actually change what it does, then that's what's going to happen. And so, you know, with things like accessibility information, one of the problems is that the underlying business processes for identifying elevators and escalators that have gone out of service are just grossly inadequate. So, you know, you can ask to have that put on the website, but that's out of that contractor's hands. So they can make it look very attractive, but it's still not going to be any more timely. So certainly I think the RAC does need to press that there are some underlying business process issues, you know, especially data quality issues when it comes to service alerts, elevators and escalators, getting schedules up on the web. And these are things that it doesn't matter who you bring in to run the site or what ideas you come up with. You know, you're going to have a really pretty, really expensive website with really bad information on it. And the other thing I will say personally, which again, this is, I read the RFP when it came out, which was a few months ago, so I don't remember if this is in the scope of work, but as a software developer, the quality of the data that WMATA publishes is quite poor. I believe I've harped on this to the RAC before. Just anything you can do to convince the board that open data really matters. Ben, I know you've seen firsthand the value of open data. I hope your transit screen is still running.
I haven't checked it recently, but yeah, maybe not. Anyway, we'll discuss this later.
Yeah, so, you know, that is really something to push while we're talking about new media and digital initiatives, because not everyone gets their information directly from WMATA. Not everyone goes to the website. A lot of people use apps. Where do those apps get their data? From WMATA. But we need that data to be clean. We need it to work, et cetera. So thank you.
If I can just press you a little bit, the one that everybody was completing was, I wish WMATA's website did or had X. How would you finish that sentence?
I would definitely go for a more modern trip planner. The only problem is that's out of their hands because the trip planner is an off-the-shelf product, and I believe it is outside the scope of work for this. So you can put a fancier interface on it, but its underlying capabilities are not going to be any different. You know, as an example of the business process problems, WMATA does not load updated weekend schedules in the trip planner until the Friday before, which is kind of bad. If you know you're going somewhere over the weekend and you know that your rail service is going to be disrupted and it's, you know, say Monday of that week, you have to wait until Friday afternoon to replan your trip and get a plan from the trip planner that actually includes, say, the shuttle or whatever that you may have to take, or, you know, trains only running every 20 minutes. I mean, that's, they know that stuff, you know, well in advance. Get it in the trip planner, get that data published to developers earlier than the Friday night before. So that's, but again, that's out of the scope of work. So there isn't a whole lot. I mean, I guess I'm kind of used to mediocre transit websites. There isn't a whole lot I can come up with that actually is in the scope of work.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you.
Any other public comment on this? Any other RAC comment on this before we move on? Well, I mean, I think this is a pretty good list. It's a pretty comprehensive list, I would say. So maybe committee chairs, we can discuss a little further about what that's going to mean and how we can sort of start talking about this at the committee level as well. All right. So let's move on to the listening session. So we're scheduled for November 25th, which is a Monday. It is the Monday before Thanksgiving, but the logic of the leadership team was that most people don't leave for Thanksgiving until Tuesday, Wednesday, that Monday will probably be okay. We do have a location now. John, remind me the exact location of this. It is the Largo Kettering
Library. Prince George County Municipal Library System Library.
Okay.
Which is not too terribly far from the Largo Metro Rail Station, but also directly served by several buses from the Largo
Metro Station. Okay. And the time, did we settle on a time yet?
6:30 to 8:30?
I think that's what we did last time, correct? Am I wrong about that? The Virginia one was also 6:30, right? I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't know. Probably. I don't remember.
All right. Yeah. All right. So 6:30, November 25th. I'm hoping that at least all of the Maryland members will be at this meeting. I will plan to be there, obviously. I hope that everyone in the RAC is able to come. We are going to be doing some outreach as well. It's going to be on Metro's website again, I imagine. And there are other things. I know that John has been planning several sort of outreach initiatives.
Well, similar. Just going to step up.
So yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense.
So I'm going to ask our media relations folks to do a press release. There'll be something on the website and on our calendar. I think in addition, as we did before, I'll be passing out flyers, or anyone is welcome to pass out flyers at nearby Metro Rail stations, letting people know, you know, for the Virginia one, I hit people at King Street and Braddock Road, because those were the two closest to the location. And I'm also going to ask our Maryland government relations point of contact to... I do. Yeah. I'm just quiet.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just quiet and tired. I'm also going to ask our Maryland government relations liaison to send it out to his contacts. And we will, of course, let the board know.
Okay.
I'm curious by a show of hands, because truthfully, when the leadership team glommed onto this, it was partly because John had already confirmed, he had made a lot of calls, but he had confirmed this place, so we were... At least in my mind, I was thinking, oh, this is one less, you know, thing he has to do. But it seems to me, as I see, I know Karen raised an issue about the access. It's quite a hike from a metro. And I'm curious, by a show of hands, how many Maryland people are going to be here for it? Because I thought I saw notes. So most of the Maryland people are going to be here. Okay.
We have four Maryland people, four of them raised their hands.
Sorry. Unfortunately, there's not a lot around the Largo Town Center Metro unless we want to rent out the Magic Johnson Theater, which is not.
Well, it's too late now. When I was thinking PGE, Community College.
That's even further from the Metro Rail station, and it has the same.
But they have the. So is the problem that there's not a bus service?
No, there's bus service. And the same buses that stop in front of PGCC stop in front of the Largo Kettering Library. You're on the bus less if you go to the library. You know, I did secure a location at a church next to Addison Road, but I think the library works better for our purposes.
Okay. Any questions before we move on?
Just sort of what is... How are we determining sort of the guidelines of what we're doing?
Yeah, I think maybe we can all huddle with James after this meeting, because definitely Barbara took sort of the lead on the Virginia one, so maybe James, you can take the lead on this Maryland one. So we should talk about that. But generally, I think we used the delegates from that particular jurisdiction to lead.
It was fairly free form.
Right, but the RAC members actually led the discussion last time, so I think we wanted to duplicate that model. I think it worked very well in Virginia.
Except there had been questions about having it less free form and at least have guidelines of three or four areas you want everybody to cover.
Sure. Okay, yeah, let's meet a little bit afterwards. That's a good question, though. Any other questions or thoughts on that before we move on? Okay, a little RAC business at the end here. So applications, is the period closed now, John, or...?
The application period closed on October 28th. We pushed the date back. We had some issues with my being out of the office. Some reaching out didn't happen. So the open application period was from about October 15th or 16th, when the press release went out, until October 28th. The press release was picked up both by Dr. Gridlock, and I saw something on Arlington Transit's page. And I'm sure it sort of flowed elsewhere. We had materials at Metro sales offices. We had posters on, I'm not sure, it was on every Metro bus that I've been on in the past few weeks. In fact, some of the signs are still up. Flyers at rail station kiosks, and at select stations, they had bigger, I think, 2-foot by 3-foot signs. And then our Office of Civil Rights, or whatever their new name is now, sent out letters to community-based organizations to try and target some of our Title VI populations. As of right now, I have around 170 to 180 applications on file. 90 or so from the District of Columbia, about 60 from Maryland, and about 25 to 30 from Virginia. in addition to the reapplication forms that I received from four of the members who are looking to be reappointed. So we've got a lot of good folks to choose from. I just finished going through all 180 of them today. And so when I get back the week after next, Lorna and I will be doing interviews with sort of the next tier candidates, along with, you know, board members who want to interview next tier candidates.
And the idea is to present this to the board at the December meeting so they can be in place by January?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Great. All right. Thank you for that update. RAC elections, those will follow the installation of new members in January. So, again, just sort of something to be thinking about over the next month or two. The bylaw review. Carol, you just want to talk about that and sort of, because you've been involved with all of this before and I have not, so you could.
The bylaws that establish the RAC or that govern the RAC call for us to do a five-year review, and that's coming up next year. So what I would suggest is an open, you know, both for the elections that are coming up in January as well as for the bylaws review process, what you might want to do is to look on the website, pull that under the, think about Metro, and then go to the Riders Advisory Council tab, and under that, look at the bylaws, because there are probably some changes that need to be made. I know several of us have talked about the fact that, in effect, you have, although members can come on at any time, generally you have your critical mass of members coming on in January, and that's the date that you have elections. So you're basically asking people to vote for somebody who they're just looking at for the first time, you know. So that might be something we want to look at. The last time we had the bylaws review, what we basically did was to establish the governance. I mean, and we always had a chair and vice chairs for each jurisdiction. But what we did is make it more of a leadership team so that the vice chairs had a more substantive role, and they worked as a team rather than just having the chair, you know, decide on the agenda and do the other thing. So that was a major change, I think. And we also, there used to be a custom, I guess it was in the bylaws, that the chair of the RAC and the chair of WMATA were from the same jurisdiction. And that was removed from our bylaws. So that is no longer the case. And I think we made changes as far as the number of terms you could serve. I think we expanded the number of terms that could be served. So I think those were the major changes we made the last time around. It took us a year, by the way, not to be discouraging.
Hopefully we're more efficient than that by now, but as a result of those bylaw changes, I'm sure.
Well, no, because the legal counsel had to go through it. You know, it took a year, and there was some horse. Well, Franken also, there was some horse trading to be had. I mean, it didn't take a year, but I mean, we didn't work on it every month. I don't mean to say that. You know.
Okay. Any other questions or thoughts on the RAC business items? Seeing none. Reports from the committees. Any reports from the committees?
No, I just wanted to say with the safety and security, we did not have a meeting for a couple of months, and they're not intending to have one this month. One of the questions is whether who is still on the committee, because several of the people that have resigned from the RAC were people that were on that subcommittee. So I think there's an open question, depending on what happens with the leadership team and the board, if there is a reason, a topic that makes sense to have a December meeting, I'm willing to work with whomever and put an agenda together. If there isn't a reason, then wait until next year and sort of reconstitute the committee with new people.
Right. Okay. Any other committee? Yes. Okay. So that brings us to open mic. Anyone? Topics of interest? Members of the public? Yes, Fred.
So last meeting, we had a speaker, and they were going to get back to us about some issues I asked about MetroCard, and I don't think they ever got back to us.
They did. I will take the hit for that. So our meeting was
Right. I think, and so just so everyone knows, that let me just tell you that if you happen to have an extra Smart Trip card, it's, you know, like I have one because sometimes we have guests and they want to use the Metro, and if you go more than 20 days without actually putting it through the at a fare place, it takes, there is this very complicated path to try to get your money back.
Are you talking about any Smart Trip funds or just Smart Benefits?
If you put, so I have a card, I put cash on it.
Cash? You lose your cash?
And to get it back takes, first you have to get someone to explain to you how it works. And that is a trick in itself, because it was explained to us about four different times incorrectly. And then to do it is another kind of a maze you have to go through.
You're sure it's 20 days, only 20 days?
Yeah.
I just left town for 21 days, came back, and all my money was still on there.
So I have like two of these cards. I just spent a month trying to get the money back.
Interesting.
The money, money doesn't show on your card anymore.
Website?
On the, when you tap, but on the fare terminal, or in one of the.
It may be still there because I do the card, but it always shows that it's $3. Right now, it's like $20-something here. So you can add it.
But there's a trick to get the, if you put your, I'm just telling you. Put your own money on, it's a real trick to get it back.
I'll follow up with actually our Smart Trip guy. Mark Schofield, who was here last month, was not, while he works for our Office of Management and Budget Services, while he works in the CFO's office, he's more budget policy than Smart Trip operations. I will reach out to the Smart Trip guy who might be able to
like
a little
come
bit
and
better.
Explain it to us, because I think everyone would be, their eyes would open wide if they heard what the procedure actually is.
Okay, I will talk to Mr. McGavick, the Smart Trip guy. He has been here. I know he was here. I forget when it was. It might have been over the summer. He was here at some point to talk about Smart Trip business rules. So,
yes.
Duly noted.
Okay, thanks for bringing that up. Any other issues? Open mic, Carol.
Yeah, I'll make this quick. I don't know why I didn't do this. I'm going to be attending the Metro Customer Service and Operations Committee tomorrow. And I was supposed to do a report on the ones that I attended. The last Metro meeting was quite exciting, and which is not usually the case because most of this work is done in committee, and so by the time the full board meets, everything is smoothed out. But I just want to say there were really three highlights. One was there was a commendation given to a group of Metro bus operators and Metro Transit Police for their work in support of people after the Navy Yard shooting, and that was quite meaningful and moving to see a whole group of people that, you know, were being recognized for something that they had done. The second thing that made it exciting was that we had a presentation on Title VI and the whole thing about impact and what the other word. Well, evidently in the committee on Customer Service and Operations that Catherine Hudgens heads up had already approved a resolution to accept these new standards that Jim Hamry touched on tonight. And two council members raised an objection, and that was very interesting to see played out because ultimately the resolution passed, and I think it was because partly people were offended by the fact that somebody's bringing something up at a meeting that could have been brought up at committee. So that, yeah, you were there. Oh, that's right. Patrick was there. So it was really very exciting to see all this stuff go on. And ultimately, you know, the newest member of Metro raised objections to including rail in this, whereas before there had only been bus service. So. It was just very interesting, and I'll do a better job of writing it up, but that was one interesting point. The other thing, and this is a sort of telling people in Maryland, and I guess it also applies to D.C., during the public comment portion of the board meeting, there was concern about the transit-oriented development at Tacoma Station, or on or near Tacoma Station, because evidently a number of people, and Patrick was also aware of, and he alluded to it in his report, there were issues about, they were ready to go to approval of a change in the development agreement that would have allowed this thing that has been delayed for 6 or 7 years to proceed. And that was also kind of held up because the advisory neighborhood commissioner from D.C., as well as the person on the other side of the boundary in Tacoma from, I think, District 1 in Tacoma Park, raised objections about some of the aspects of the development. I didn't get into the details, and they didn't either, but you might want to keep that on your radar because that's likely to come up at the Maryland listening session. Maybe Patrick can know.
Yeah, and also just to say, there were some accessibility issues, ADA issues that came up, and we were unaware of those. We're going to take a look at them in our committee. So, yeah, there is enough time for us to look at it, but they may come up.
Okay. Thanks for the update. Anything else for open mic? Yes. Come on down.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi. My biggest metro concern right now is the impending opening of the Silver Line. And I work in Arlington, and my company is going to be relocating to Tysons in January. And I sit on a committee at work that's based on communicating internally, just news about the move. So I've been trying to do as much research as I can on the dates of the opening of the Silver Line. And as I'm sure you all know, there are a lot of different, there's a new website that's created specifically devoted to the Silver Line, but I was hoping to get the inside scoop.
So
or some direction.
So are we. Actually, okay. We heard about that. The Silver Line marketing plan was part of the previous meeting, which I believe is now on our website. So you can
I read that newsletter.
Okay, but you can also listen to the presentation that was given at that meeting,
okay,
which did have some additional details. It did not have the opening date. Nobody knows the opening date.
So yeah, there are a lot of news stories that pop up and new articles, and I never know what to trust. And I'm right, waiting for something from some horse's mouth.
Right. Yes. Well, none of these horses know anything, unfortunately.
Okay.
But it's something that we've asked them about, and I mean, that was the number one question afterwards, is when is this thing opening?
I
saw something just recently, like February.
Right.
Valentine's Day kind of thing. Didn't I just see that in the last day or two?
I did.
That's the latest thing I heard.
Oh, okay.
Nothing's official yet, though.
Right. I'm just going to say that there have been no official dates set for the opening.
Yes.
Okay, so you know as much as I do.
Yep.
The airport authority needs to hand it over to Metro.
Right.
Metro needs to then complete its testing.
From what I've heard, they've handed it over and the testing is going on, but we don't know when the testing is going to end.
I don't believe it's going to handover.
Oh, I thought
that was my understanding as well.
Anyway.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm glad I came.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm here
with something different. Someone there, they are working on turning over the authority to Metro sometime in December. That's what I heard.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anything else for open mic? All right. I guess we are adjourned then. Thank you. And Maryland members, if you want to just come over here to talk.